Everybody else is here except Vesa. Kupari is joining us online. And Vesa, can you hear us?
Yes, I do.
No, we cannot hear you.
Why?
Now. Okay, now we can hear.
Very good.
Okay, so let's go. You can start. And we have here Linda Saukko-Rauta, who is doing this live imaging for us.
Live sketching.
Okay, Vesa, please go ahead.
So do I have 15 minutes to go? Is it 15 minutes?
Maximum 15 minutes.
Please. Maximum, all right. Hello everyone, my name is Vesa Kupari. I'm in charge of the financial investments of the University of Jyväskylä, and I was running a panel yesterday about responsibility in financial investments of universities. And I lost my voice and it hasn't returned yet, but hopefully you can hear something. Okay, so the panelists were from two universities, meaning Helsinki University and Aalto University, and from three asset managers, one from Stockholm SEB, one from Helsinki Evli, and one from Oslo Storebrand. And in the beginning, we had a discussion about the wide concept of responsibility. What does it actually mean with investments? And because there are some cases that somebody might think that we should only focus on carbon neutrality and environment, but we agree that we have a wider concept, meaning E, environment, S, social, G, governance, and of course the financial element. We are not able to lose the money of universities, but we are accountable to the university community and to increase the wealth of the universities. Okay, we had three wider topics or themes. The first one was how to set the responsibility targets for ESG dimensions. And the discussion was extremely interesting, and it was a bit hard to try to summarize it, but I tried. And first of all, those targets should be based on the values and missions of the organization who is setting those. Secondly, the world is extremely complicated. But we have to try to make some kind of impact with the help of investments. Currently, the ESG ratings, they are not at all consistent. There is hardly any correlation between ratings between the different service providers. So that the quality at the moment is I would say, poor. But it's getting better step by step. And then we agreed that basically also concrete actions are needed, like exclusion of heavy coal or oil producers. But that is not the only way to do it, definitely not. And in spite of the fact that there are major data quality problems, some measurement definitely is needed. And it should be reported transparently so that everybody can see that how the development is actually progressing. And when we are talking about financial investments, our quarter is 25 years. For somebody else dealing with space, it's 250 years, but our quarter is 25 years, and that's short enough. Okay, and then we had a case example at the end of this session, so that based on our case, the University of Jyväskylä, who is having wide, globally diversified portfolio. We are having several asset managers, hundreds of funds, thousands of companies, And the question was, would it be reasonable to set targets to these ESG dimensions based on one, although imperfect, key performance indicator provided by one of the most credible service providers like MSCI or Morningstar? And basically, the most important thing is to follow up if the direction of change is proceeding as we are targeting. Well, this was the questions, and the answers were interesting. So somebody dared to say this might be possible, and ESG rating is getting better. Some other said that the long-term approach might be reasonable, and he was setting the question at the same time, what is actually the role of asset managers in this kind of widely diversified portfolio? And those are good questions that we don't have the right answers yet. Okay, how many minutes do I have? Two topics left. So carbon neutrality was the second one, and first question was, should we exclude industries or companies? And general agreement was that would be only the last choice. We have to focus on supply chain, not an individual company. We can even ask, what is a carbon neutral company? It's not that easy to answer that question. And if companies are or industries are excluded from our investment portfolio, it has to be defined transparently in a way that you really know what you are excluding and what you are not excluding, so that nobody can say that you are only doing greenwashing. So then next question was, what is the meaning importance of transition funds? Generally, it was agreed that it would be better to have direct impact, but on the other hand, it's usually impossible. There are basically huge variety of impact funds with various quality, I would say. And at the moment, there are quite a limited number of carbon transition funds available right now. And the basic question is, if you want to be an active or passive investor, if you are a passive investor, then it's very, very difficult to have direct impact. But as we understand, most of us are passive investors, because if we are dealing with diversified portfolios, nothing else is possible, at least at the University of Jyväskylä. Then there was interesting question. How did the panelists see the role of carbon emission compensation? And four panelists and me said, no, they don't have, they don't play any role. And only one panelist said, yes, they might play some kind of role. And she explained it more that the compensation should be the last resort if the carbon neutrality is impossible to reach with other tools. So, not too easy. Second interesting question was, what did the panelists think? What is their organization's deadline for the carbon neutrality? Meaning the scope 1 and 2 carbon neutrality, meaning direct impact on emissions and no indirect impacts included. And this should be basically a very easy one, scope 1 and 2. But the answers where one said there is no exact year, one said 2030, but there are huge question marks. One said, well, it's impossible to say a year, but we have to increase pace. One said 2040, One said 2050 latest, and I answered 2035. This is our proposal to the board of University of Jyväskylä, and let's see what it shall be. But if that would be the target, it wouldn't be too easy, and it's very tough compared with other targets that are set in the world. Okay, and the final topic was biodiversity, so that I could crystallize it in one sentence. Biodiversity is very important an issue, but very difficult to measure, so that we are really focusing on this issue, but at the moment it's impossible to measure it in any reasonable way. Well, that's it. Hopefully you could follow me to a certain extent. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Vesa. And now Evelina, please, from workshop 3. Okay. So I'm Evelina Asikainen from Tampere University of Applied Sciences. I arrived here this morning, so I was leading the workshop on what is required of university teachers when bringing sustainability and responsibility to curricula. And we had a very vivid discussion. And I start my summary by describing shortly the structure of our workshop, and then I will wrap up the main results. We had three parts. First was a panel discussion hosted by two students of Tampere University of Applied Sciences. Secondly, we had a group work, and third was a wrap-up talk by Meri Karvinen from Aalto University. The students, they asked teachers attending to the panel about, for example, about reasons for not discussing sustainable development, about the difficulties in addressing issues like social sustainability or inequalities, about ways of bringing future into courses and classroom, and about ways of tackling issues like participation and change agency in practice on the courses. These were issues which they themselves had somehow experienced difficult during their studies. In the answers, the teachers brought up commonly felt problems like having to reveal yourselves, your values and commitments when you are discussing issues related to sustainable development as a teacher. And also about being uncertain whether you know enough or not. And also finding the right scale of discussing these issues was difficult for some teachers and was mentioned as one of the problems. The second phase was a group work using a Flinger board shared with all groups, and the groups were formed broadly according to disciplines. So there was a group for science and technology, another for society, and a third for education and arts, and then it was the fourth group for teachers who had economics background. The groups discussed problems, practices or structures which could facilitate sustainability education and good practices, and then finally good practices which they have themselves developed. And in these discussions, curriculum development, sustainability education in teacher training and further education of teachers, as well as discussions with other teachers and enough time for discussions, allocating enough time for discussions, were considered
as important practices and structures helping to take sustainability into teaching. Also, sustainable practices at campus, campuses, shared values and psychological safety in the teaching situation became came out as important structural prerequisites for successful sustainability education. Finally, ability to dialogue, systemic thinking and a learning by doing attitude of a teacher considered such personal capabilities which would facilitate sustainability education. Teachers also shared many good practices. Many mentioned inter or multidisciplinary courses or projects as an easy way to show that there are different kinds of knowledges and understandings of good solution, sustainable solution in a case. And they also said that humor, hope, inspiration, and positivity, including positive imagination of futures, are important attitudinal good practices. And thirdly, it is important to show what has been accomplished through examples from working life or research. We have to be able to motivate, not to despair our students. And we have to make the students to understand that we need all the essential stakeholders to solve the wicked problems. Cooperation of teachers, co-teaching and discussing teaching experiments are already used in many higher education institutions to share good practices. The third part was Mary Karvinen's wrap-up talk, which connected the workshop with concepts and research. She talked about three levels of change making: political, personal, and practical. Political and personal James produced changes in the practices, also in higher education institutions. We can work on the personal level through reflecting our own aims and mental models. We can work on the political level by making sustainability education a self-evident part of teacher education, supporting curriculum development, and by sharing and making space and time for dialogue with other teachers and working life. This can produce some committed sustainability champions, teaching champions and other kind of champions. It can also help many more teachers to give up their traditional roles and to throw themselves into co-learning and co-teaching. We should actively engage stakeholders to ensure that they are interested in the competencies we are developing to our graduates. Mary also emphasized the need for teacher education and addressed the ways to educate citizens with the key sustainability competencies. So that kind of teacher education would be more interested in learning processes and learning together than outcomes. Also, in teacher education, we would have to take new looks at evaluation of competencies. For example, how to evaluate the competence of empathy. Mary also emphasized the importance of curriculum and the interaction between curriculum and teaching practices. My personal conclusion of this workshop from a teacher educator's point of view is that we need pedagogies of not knowing and pedagogies of uncertainty. It is, of course, important to have sufficient content knowledge and sufficient knowledge of the developments in sustainable development. For this, we need good materials and summaries of climate reports, etc. And I think that there is a plethora of those. But we must admit that we cannot always have as good knowledge as we would like to have. Pedagogies of not knowing or pedagogies of uncertainty would prepare teachers to face the situations of feeling that you don't know enough. They would help teachers act despite of not knowing exactly, or despite of knowing that there are contradictory opinions or different readings of same facts. We need to build teacher education which encourages teachers to make change, take risks, and to bear the uncertainty inherent to experimenting new pedagogies. This has to be facilitated with the organizational structures like team teaching, organized sharing, and with further education, and by allowing time for experimentation, dialogue, and sharing. One of the risks teachers should take more often is participatory approach. This can mean that students can affect the implementation and evaluation practices of the course, or that they can participate in processes in which they engage with the change making in communities. This also changes teachers' role more to a coach or mentor, and that is, in my opinion, something we need. I think that all the participants of the workshop shared good practices and left the workshop a little better equipped for making change, be it personal, political, or practical in our universities. Thank you all.
Thank you so much, Evelina. And there is already a discussion going a little bit on the chat, so you can do that. But we can also, if there is time after each presentation, we can have questions or comments here. And we have now a couple of minutes if anyone has a comment or a question for Evelina for this working group number 3. No, if not, then please, Sami, it's your turn. Now we will hear about carbon.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot. I think that previous conclusion and summary was so great that I feel that I won't have such a great conclusion since our workshop just ended some minutes ago. However, I'll try to summarize some of the key conclusions, and happily we did have help. I did get some help from workshop participants since we used this platform where they could also make their conclusions about the workshop. So I'm going to read some of those to you out loud. I'm Sami Elgeni. I'm a doctoral researcher here from the University of Jyväskylä, from the JYU Wisdom Community and from the School of Business and Economics. So my workshop, it was titled Carbon Footprint and Offsetting in Universities Towards Joint Reporting Model. So basically, we were discussing how we could kind of push forward this sort of joint reporting model, since now all the universities need to report their carbon footprints to the Ministry of Education and Culture. And this has brought great challenges to the comparability of the carbon footprints of different universities. We had a workshop both on Thursday and Friday, so I had a two-part workshop. The first day focused on carbon footprints and more on this joint reporting model thing. And then on the second day, so today, we focused on carbon offsetting and such issues. So actually the keynote from Sampo gave us a really nice introduction to that workshop as well. So the first day, so yesterday, we were discussing about this, how universities now need to report their carbon footprint to the Ministry of Education and Culture. So we discussed some key questions related to carbon footprints, and I presented a roadmap that we've been developing in this FinArma network for a more integrated reporting, so that we can discuss that within different universities. So let me tell you some of the questions that we had. So for example, we discussed that, do you think that university carbon footprint reporting is important? Why not? Then we, for example, discussed the barriers. So what are the barriers in producing those carbon footprints within universities? Then we discussed what kind of role do you see for universities in developing better practices in carbon footprint reporting and mitigation throughout the society? And how could this role be enhanced? Then regarding the roadmap, I want to ask people what kind of pros and cons do they see in this roadmap. I got a lot of interesting, helpful comments, so we're going to be looking at those later while we start developing the roadmap further. Then also we discussed lastly a little bit about other things as well, so not only climate and carbon, but I wanted to ask also what kind of other environmental indicators universities should collectively account for, and we got a lot of interesting answers to that as well. So let me see a little bit what people told, what could be the key messages from the workshop number one. So basically, I think people were kind of the same opinion that yes, we do need this sort of joint reporting model, and it's really important issue. Then people also discussed that universities also have a key role for producing this sort of research-based knowledge about the carbon footprint. So it's not only for producing the carbon footprint results for ourselves and doing those calculations, but also kind of trying to scale and communicate those methods that we're using and put them into practice in society as well. And some comments, I cannot now show you the roadmap, but we had kind of this mid-step to 25 and then the goal of carbon neutrality in 2030. Some people thought that some of the goals were rather easy, so we should be more ambitious even in making them in the roadmap, so we could even make more stricter goals. And yes, I think that's about it from the first workshop. And then the second workshop, we focused more on carbon offsetting. So we discussed a lot about traditional offsetting, so buying these sort of carbon credits from the market, as Sampo already told us. So some questions that we, for example, asked there was, what do you think are the main barriers and benefits in implementing these sort of traditional offsets in universities? And then we also discussed that, do you think that these offsets and emission reductions complement each other, or do they rather compete for the same resources, for example, money and time? Then we also discussed a little bit what actually should belong to the offsetting responsibility of a university. So I think we're all in the same mind that it's quite clear that we need to mitigate all our emissions, and we need to consider all the emissions, so all the direct emissions that our operations cause and the indirect and so on. However, what's more unclear is that if these all of these things belong also to the offsetting responsibility of a university. For example, if we don't own these premises and someone else kind of owns these premises and and buys the heat and so on. Is it our responsibility then to offset those, since we're the main consumers of that? That's a complex question, I would say. Yes, then we moved on a little bit from traditional offsetting. So we discussed more also this sort of internal carbon offsetting model, or one could say also this sort of a carbon tax or carbon pricing model in universities, so which could be an alternative approach to traditional offsets. So in that model, we would kind of not put so much effort in buying this carbon offsetting credits from external providers, but build our own sustainability funds within the university, and through that invest money in mitigating impacts within the university and investing in sustainability research and education. So basically the handprint or the positive impacts of our university. Well, there's of course a lot of challenges in that sort of models as well. So now we initially discussed in the group as well. So what do people think about that? What are the main barriers, benefits related to that? A lot of good answers again. And then lastly, again, I asked this sort of a question that how would you balance between mitigating negative impacts and creating a positive societal impact in universities? So did people think that they're one is more important than the other? And that's, I think, something that we need to kind of also consider, this sort of a balance. Yes, so again, some key messages that I'll try to see what people came up with. So firstly, people said that offsetting, it seems to be a more difficult subject than footprint, and things are a little bit more complex even when we talk about offsetting. And then we talked, of course, also about this quality offsets. So we need a clear guidance on what are quality offsets. And people also thought that, all right, maybe we should first start offsetting some categories, but not everything, but start from something small and then expand from that. And this internal offsetting was also discussed in the group. Some find it a good model, and some find that there are also a lot of issues within that. Then there was also this thing that at the end of the day, carbon footprint is just one aspect of sustainability. So that's also an important thing to know. And a lot of the groups really emphasized that we need to exercise caution with the offsets. So we really need to tread quite carefully with them. Nevertheless, I think that most of the groups agree that maybe we do need offsets in one form or the other. Cool. And then lastly, one comment from a group. They said that they believe that we shall focus more on handprint solutions rather than these offsetting things. So they said, as our handprint can be an order of magnitude higher than our footprint. So they thought that we should more focus on our handprints rather than the footprints. All right. I think that's all from my workshop. And if we have some time for yes. questions, mm-hmm. yeah, then if you'd like to ask something.
Excellent summary and good work. My question is just, did you decide on the next steps how to go forward in reporting, and what would be the minimum in the report made by each university, and could the reports be different in, how should I say, yet, but have a minimum of something?
Yeah, I do have to say that in this group we didn't kind of really settle on the concrete next steps, but we're going to do that in the following weeks in the FinArma network. So I think we'll have a meeting, I think next week or in 2 weeks, where we're going to settle on the like deadlines and timeline. But in the roadmap, we do kind of agree that from now on, we have some common categories, for example, related to buildings and energy use and to business travel. And I don't remember, maybe there was something else as well. And those are the things that we're now at least going to start reporting right now. And then by 2025, we would have more categories, for example, related to the investments and procurement and those kind of things. And by 2030, we would have encompassed at least mostly everything within the university's operations. And by then, every university should kind of have the whole figure of their carbon footprint. Yeah.
If no one else has a question, I have one. Did you did you have a discussion about the the offset thing, and especially with the technical universities? I know that they are struggling with their target to be carbon neutral by 2030. If the ministries decision that we cannot use the government money for the offsets, if that sticks, then it practically, well, universities have a little bit of wiggling way of it, because we have other we have, for instance, investments that we could use their profits, but the technical universities, they don't have much other choice. So did you have this discussion there, and what kind of should we have, like a message to the ministry about this also, that okay, if you really want all the universities, technical universities of the higher education industries to be carbon neutral, then you have to allow us to use money on offsetting it, even though it would be like sort of internal model of offsetting that would direct this to our own research or societal impact.
Yeah, that's a really, of course, relevant and good question. I do think that a lot of groups like discuss this, and I still haven't gone through all the comments, but I think a lot of groups discuss that this is one of the main barriers, of course, of implementing these offsets in universities, this decision from the ministry to not allow to use the government funding on offsets. And I think that's definitely something that we need to discuss more probably with the ministry, and I do hope that it's maybe gonna change and that this decision will not be like final as such. But yeah, let's see. I don't know if anyone from who was in my working group, if you want to, like, you can also share if you have some discussion related to that. Yeah.
Or maybe I think the internal offsetting is one that you could give for the point better. Because I think there's a lot of potential in building our hand trains and kind of like improving that. But it's still difficult to measure what is actually happening and how much. That was one of the big discussions.
Yes.
To
continue on that, at least in the University of Arts where I come from, I'm seeing that we anyway need to put some money in our internal development projects, and if we could fund those with the internal funding, then kind of get some monetary benefits also from that, so we don't have to compensate like externally, and we put also money in our internal development. We can address our goals.
Okay, thank you very much, Sami and working group one. So now Vera and Johanna, the biodiversity group, work group number 6.
Okay, so hi everyone, my name is Vera Lainio and I am a project planner here at the University of Jyväskylä and the School of Resource Wisdom. And my name is Johanna Toivonen-Gonzalez, I come from the University of Turku and I work there as a grant writer in research services. And I'm very much interested in these phytochoruses because I'm a biologist from my background. Yeah, and the topic of our workshop today was biodiversity impact assessment and ecological compensation in higher education institutions. And we had some very fruitful discussions with our participants this morning. And we actually talked about some of the same questions that Sami presented, but with biodiversity in mind. And this workshop kind of built on the keynote talk that we heard yesterday from Janne Kotiaho. So interesting topics. And at the moment, the biodiversity impacts of higher education institutions or universities, they're a fairly unknown topic, but also a very important one. So unlike carbon footprinting, we don't yet have similar tools for the biodiversity impacts, but we do need to start tackling biodiversity loss, and that's why we need to dive deeper into this topic and take it into account in our own actions. And it's sort of our duty as educators and researchers and experts in universities to study these topics and share our knowledge with the society. And the biodiversity impacts of our actions are much more complicated than our impact on the physical campus area. For example, our consumption choices can indirectly have impacts all over the world, just like with emissions as well. And we here at the University of Jyväskylä have studied the ecological impacts of energy use or district heat use, and also procurement or the goods and services we buy. And we talked about that perhaps these methods could be adopted by other universities as well. But methodologies should also be developed for other impact categories as well. Like with carbon footprinting, we can assess the impact of travels or investments or energy use or construction and so on. So we need to look into how could we assess the ecological impacts of these actions as well. Well, the biodiversity impacts are a common topic for all the universities, but there are experts of different fields and topics in different universities. So perhaps this question of methodology development could be divided so that each university could focus on some category and use their special expertise, and then we could share our findings and ideas on a shared forum like we do with carbon footprinting, like we heard some of them.
Yes, then besides of these categories and indicators, what should be measured and how, which is actually very complicated issue, we talked about this ecological compensation related to these impacts, and very much based on what we heard yesterday with Janne Kotiaho's talk. So, well, just to stay short, that what does it mean? It's that we try to compensate the damage that we cause for biodiversity by restoring or conservation the nature elsewhere, because we cannot compensate it exactly in the same place. And there we, of course, have many challenges. We discussed on those challenges because the nature is very unique. The species composition is unique, and also the functionality of the whole ecosystem depends on the species composition. So it's not that straightforward thing, this compensation issue. But anyway, the positive side of that is that we try to do something for those impacts that we cannot avoid or we cannot decrease. Because there is always something, and we can, for example, we discussed the possibility to have projects in those areas where those impacts are traced globally, like for example in different countries we could have restoration, conservation or training projects, and that could work well if we have good connections, but all this takes time. And then, well, time issue is actually also related to the issue that it takes a lot of time that we can compensate our damage in nature, especially if it comes to old growth forest. It can take 50 or 100 years before we have a similar kind of forest compensated. Yeah, I already mentioned this mitigation here, that we should first try to avoid diminish our actions, and then comes the compensation in the end for those actions that we cannot avoid. And yeah, well, there was some discussion on that, and in the end we came, or actually already in the beginning we came in very important issue. What was that what we should do now next, and what is our interest to continue with this topic, because we had very short workshop this morning. So we were very small group there. We were only probably six persons and one in online, so some people dropped out. But anyway, we were very efficient and a dedicated group, and we decided to have an ambitious goal for this and what we should do next. And as the current group is preparing this roadmap for Ministry of Culture and Education, so we agreed that we would like to have a message there together with that message, because we have to act now. This is an important issue. So probably we cannot have there in the same level of information with all the indicators and those things, but we can say something. And we decided that we prepare after this workshop a conclusion of those things that we can say. And if the ultimate goal is to be all the universities to aim to this no net loss goal in 2030, if we cannot reach that, it's okay. We anyways have to set a goal higher up so that we start to act and at least start to develop the methodologies and indicators, how to measure it. And Vera already said that it could work so that we divide work between the universities so that it's not in responsible of the one organization to develop the methodology, but we can do it together and with different categories. So far there is information only about these procurements and
energy,
district heat, so we can include more categories and start to brainstorm what to do with those. But yeah, about this message to the ministry, so we have to of course discuss in our organization first what we can engage. So there is this UNIFI meeting in this month still, so hopefully we could have something within so far, and then the members who participate in that meeting can already decide something that okay, this kind of message is okay to send to ministry as a goal. Yes, so what else? We discussed this biodiversity or ecological handprint also. What does it mean and what kind of actions that would mean, like training and our intellectual capacity, using that to avoid the impacts or train new generation, teach basically, and this societal interaction that the universities are doing. So through those actions, we can do something. Did I forget something? Does someone else want to add something that we agreed? But I think the most urgent thing is to prepare this message with a roadmap to the ministry. So that's the next step.
Thank you very much. Do we have any comments or questions from the audience here? What about our audience online? You can also ask for permission to speak by raising your hand. Yes, Sami. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. I can ask. I really would have wanted to be on this workshop and in that one as well. But what I want to ask, I don't know if I maybe or you already said it, but nevertheless. So was there any discussion? So what do you think really is the timeline for this sort of biodiversity analysis? That do you see? And so we discussed, you know, that during this following years we can probably start including all the categories of the university. Do you have any ideas, or did you discuss at any point, like, how do you see this timeline development in biodiversity?
That was complicated because we are in the very beginning of that work compared to what the carbon issue is, but we only discussed this 2030 as an ambitious goal, but I think it depends a lot who is working for this, how many people can engage to this, and our universities volunteer to put some funding to that, for example, to do that kind of thing. So all that depends on how fast that will advance. So yeah, I don't know if we could discuss about this together if what relates to this roadmap, because it would be nice to have it like a coherent message to if that there is also some realistic time scale.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but we thought about the 2030 no net loss goal as like if we have a goal, then it sort of pushes us to work on these topics and so on. But I don't think we can make a specific time frame like we have on the carbon side of things. So yeah, we're still in the beginning, and hopefully this work will continue, and we can then make more specific timeframes for this.
Any other questions or comments? No.
Okay. Thank you very. Oh, sorry.
Yes, thank you for something. I'm Jukka Kärpä from the University of Turku, and thank you all presenters. It has been very interesting. Now, thinking of the whole footprint issue, be it biodiversity or carbon or whatever. To my understanding, we higher education institutions and research institutions, I think it would still be more important for us to actually focus on the methodology of how to, first of all, measure these things and how to decrease our footprint, rather than just basically trying to sort of follow what is the main kind of mainstream thing in the society now that everyone, you know, I don't know how to say this, but being the front line, exploring critically and also trying to build the methodologies, because that's what we should do in these buildings, which have a huge carbon footprint anyway. And by that means then have a potential handprint on the whole society so that we have actually provided something. Like not only just selfishly trying to be carbon neutral ourselves. Yeah. I don't know what impact that would have at the end, but that's my sort of gut feeling of what we should do here.
I think the methodology development is the first thing to start from. So if we can, we thought that if we cannot say that we will have no net loss by 2030, at least we have developed some methodologies by that to measure our impact, and then that will in the end to lead us to no net loss of nature. First, of course, we need to know what are our impacts, and that is the process.
So if I may continue still, the time frame that we have set to ourselves now regarding when we can do something, I think those are rather lame, honestly. I would rather try to do things more quickly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that means. Perhaps we should get funding, as always, to actually speed up the processes so that we could do things more quickly. Not just as a sort of something that we do aside of our mm-hmm. other things, but put this in the sort of front line of what the university should do for the benefit of the whole global society.
Yeah.
Oh, Mary, yeah.
Well, hi all. Mary Lerkiniani and a doctoral researcher here at Jyväskylä. And well, I've been doing, as many of us, a long time advancing sustainability in the university setting. So I would really much continue on the footsteps of Yuki, that I was quite surprised at how kind of lame goals we had in the investment group. I think even the service providers are ahead of us, and I think we really should refocus our actions and look for the time frame, look for the impact. And I don't think there is any other university function outside sustainability that is continuously talking about the handprint. I don't think we expect our
human resources to have a strong handprint on other organizations, human resource policies or whatever. So I think that is the task of the researchers, of course, and universities, to have the strong impact. But in order to be credible, in order to be interesting, in order to be impactful, we really need to act way more rapidly. And I think this is what this seminar is all about. So I think we should aim for next year, 2023, carbon neutrality by 25, and so on. I know this is very difficult, but we don't do it any other way than by these means and by being very, I would say, loud and ambitious. So good luck with the biodiversity and climate neutrality. Yeah.
Great. Excellent. Okay, let's continue with the biodiversity theme, but now about the biodiversity education. So Edin and Elli, please, from working group number 4.
Okay, hello everybody. Our work group was about multidisciplinarity and biodiversity. My name is Elli Hämminen and I work in the University of Eastern Finland within the project which is about biodiversity education network. And we are presenting our workshop findings with Elina Aksonen and Emma Hapanen, who are also working in our project. But we thought that we could start with short words about our project and then about the findings of the workshop. So, and first, thanks to everyone who was participating in our workshop. We had very good discussions, and also the previous workshop discussions were, the presentations were related to our discussions. So we have a project which is funded by Ministry of Education and Culture, and we have 5 universities collaborating in this project. And now we have also met new people here, and maybe we have new people to collaborate with us. Project. And what we are doing is launching a network cooperation in biodiversity related studies in the universities and trying to bring biodiversity related courses together and digitalize and develop them, as well as develop field courses and create some new courses, for example, Biodiversity Now, which Emma is going to talk a bit more later on. And the overall target is to create new study possibilities for the students about biodiversity issues. And in this way, to help to solve biodiversity related questions in the society. I'm happy to tell more about our project, but now we will concentrate on workshop findings.
Okay, I continue. I'm Elina Oksanen. I'm a professor in plant physiology and biotechnology at the University of Eastern Finland, and I'm also leading the biodiversity network education project. Yesterday, we started introductions with its background. We had a quite multidisciplinary group. Of course, several of us are biologists, but then we had also people from environmental science, education background, social science, literature, language background, including also student members. And to warm up, we made a figure illustrating the extensions of biodiversity issues on all aspects of life and society. And in the first exercise, we worked on multidisciplinary education, what are the main concerns and difficulties in collaboration, and the main negative things were different backgrounds of people, integration and suitability of the course, the biodiversity courses, widely to study plans, timing issues, of course, possible lack of connections to the main subjects, whatever they are, and then lack of common language, unknown terminology, and methodology, which are of course very difficult things in that kind of joint education. But then many positive, mostly positive prospects and sites were found. This kind of joint multidisciplinary education would give a comprehensive understanding and multiple viewpoints to complex issues, new ideas and ways of thinking, understanding of different and opposite opinions. And also we discussed possible approaches and methodology in that kind of multidisciplinary courses. So these would be, for example, case studies, which are relating to widely known environmental issues like Baltic Sea or mining things. Then problem-based learning in general would be quite useful. And then making games, that would be a very nice idea. And also we today we talked little bit about joint summer school activities. So that was about the first exercise.
Yes, and I promised to say a few words about our biodiversity that now course. So it's the course that we are now developing to Climate University and UMA Europa Alliance. And the meaning of the course is to appeal to variety of learners and present scientific knowledge in relation to real world issues. And we want to encourage the learners to think about the biodiversity and the biodiversity crisis from their field perspectives and personal interests. And today in our workshop, we shared our ideas how to develop this our course. And we got many great ideas, especially since we are from all biologists. And we have different, also students from different fields. We got many great ideas how to be multidisciplinary and how to make interesting course biodiversity for non-biologists learners. And for that, we also got new ideas, for example. Today we figured out that maybe we should do a summer school because we learned that connectivity is key for learning and for biodiversity. Yes. Any questions? Yeah. So.
So thank you for all the participants in our workshop. We got many ideas how to continue our work with the biodiversity.now course and with our project. And we got new people to participate maybe, and very many important comments how to take all kind of multidisciplinary viewpoints into account in the work. And we ended up with Das Gupta report messages about how to connect biodiversity and economy in the whole society and whole life. And from yesterday's discussions and from today also, the take home message from our workshop is that people are part of biodiversity and you cannot isolate human beings from the biodiversity. And someone in our workshop actually said that life equals biodiversity, which is a very, very nice way to end this conclusion about our workshop, and thank you all.
Thank you. We have a question here at chat from Kristina Tolvanen and to you guys, and regarding biodiversity education. Have you thought about how to offer this type of a content in continuous education? I myself have a fairly new degree from the field of biology, and I would love to continue developing my expertise by, for example, participating in field courses. I haven't found any opportunities for this yet.
Yeah, we have been thinking about that. Continuous learning, lifelong learning is on our agenda, of course. And once we have made this biodiversity now course, we can take parts or modules which might be in Finnish also to open for general public and everybody. So this kind of thing. Field courses are also, it's another story. We are developing field courses which are mainly for, of course, they have been for biology students and forestry students and so on. But this is a good point to offer those also outside people outside the university. So we need to consider about that also.
Or in fact, I'm a biologist too, and I wouldn't mind having a field course with you guys every year. That would be refreshing, please.
Yeah. Thank you for your presentations. And I think it is really an important part and of all kinds of sustainability education is biodiversity education. And what I think that is important, especially for non-biologists, is to learn how to observe nature. Learn the actual skills of observing and making a difference and seeing and understanding that how much biodiversity there is. So when you are developing your education, I really would like you to have this kind of activity-based things also, and also developing skills and competencies. What are the biodiversity competencies for everybody? How can you actually grasp biodiversity? What does it demand from anybody to be able to grasp biodiversity? Mm-hmm. And I would say that the skill to observe is one key.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, I agree. I used to work for a municipality and we got a lot of like people always calling when we had a municipality gardener. And I was the environmental officer, and we agreed to just leave some part of the forest that we don't touch it. And immediately people start calling, it's not clean here. There's like, you know, everywhere there's branches. And so you have to like educate people that, you know, there should be, you know, wood left there and behind. So exactly. Yes, it's definitely needed a lot. So if there's no any other questions or comments, then thank you very much. And
if you want to join our network, you can send email and contact us. You're welcome.
Excellent. And now the final workshop, we continue with the education theme. Mikael. Okay, you have switched. It's perfectly fine.
And I think, Mikael, you can help me if I forget to say something. So, good afternoon on my behalf to all of you. I'm Marianna Laakso, Vice Rector, responsible for education in University of Jyväskylä. And I was part in this today's working group. And it was titled Cooperation Between Higher Education Institutions in Sustainable Education. So the education theme continues. Yeah, it was really interesting to hear the last presentation. Firstly, I have to say that it was a really great session. I think the themes, two themes that we have there, they kind of form a very good combination, because the first theme related to different contents and courses and study modules we already have in this field, and the other theme related to how to integrate these contents in the study curricula, and so there were both of these sides. and also I have to say in the already in this phase that the discussions were truly lively and productive, and we got a high amount of materials both in the Padlet and in the chat. So I think we also have to wrap them up. I couldn't do that at that point, but Michael was hosting. So if you have something to add from there, please do. So we have two presenters. First, the academic rector Tapio Määttä from University of Eastern Finland, and then Pekka Auvinen, vice president of Karelia University of Applied Sciences. And Tapio Määttä was first telling about an UNIFI working group, which we decided to found after UNIFI has published this thesis promoting sustainable development. And the aims of this very small group, kind of ad hoc group, was to firstly to define the current state, the status in our universities concerning different courses, study modules, degree programs, and also we were very interested about the various existing networks in these fields, and the networks are of course working not only in the university sector but also in all higher education institutions, so also universities of applied sciences. So the first aim was to kind of to define the current state, what do we already have on there, and the second aim was to consider how we can strengthen and deepen our collaboration in this field across high education institutions. The observations and discussions related to this theme clearly show that universities and universities of applied sciences have taken this work very seriously. Last evening in the Keva dinner, Tom Berling was discussing with Ville Niinistö, and you were talking about these theses, and Tom was a little bit worried because the theses are now launched, so how they will be implemented in the universities, and I think we can be quite optimistic that this work is truly going on. So what we learned in this working group, I was also part of that Tapio Määttä's group, that there are truly significant number of different level and different forms of study courses, MOOCs and thematic models available. Yeah, and especially I have to mention Climate University Network, which is totally unique in our country and also internationally, and that network has been doing amazing work to create MOOCs and to build cross-study agreements across high education institutions. And also we learned that UNIPIT is another network and concentrated on the courses relating to sustainable development education, but many others that we learned. It was a privilege to be among this group because we heard so much important information across our mostly universities, but also something that is going on in the universities of applied sciences. And in some universities, like here in Jyväskylä, the other part of the thesis statement that these contents should be integrated to each student's study portfolio as obligatory parts of the curriculum. So we have already done this. So the planetary well-being MOOC that was created by our experts from multidisciplinary MOOC is now in the forthcoming curricula, obligatory for all our students, and also our teachers are very eager to learn it. I'm a student on that MOOC course at the moment, not the most laborious one. That it takes some time to get all it done. Then the other presentation, Pekka Auvinen from Applied University of Karelia, addressed the important theme how in universities of applied sciences, how in the framework of the curricular work called Tuning, they have updated the common competencies for both bachelor and master level degrees, and how they have defined competencies also for sustainable development there. So they have included all the pillars of the sustainability and done this diverse workforce cross-cut jointly and systematically. All universities of applied sciences, so I think it's a really admirable work that they have done it. You have done it so systematically. But at this phase, Auvinen told that the common competencies framework was still in a draft mode, but it definitely looked very carefully constructed and considered. And in the lively discussion after these two presentations, there were many themes that the group and the people participating took up. First of all, we realized that although we have done almost 1 year work to trying to figure out all the different study modules and courses that are available, we learned that there are much more of them. And also we learned that there are many more networks that we were not yet, all of us were not aware of, also international networks. And we discussed that many of the courses that are now in students' curricula or available for the students, they are still quite general. And we also need courses that deepen our students' understanding on these issues from various scientific backgrounds, like courses relating to administration, technological issues, law, and so on. Of course, we realized that these kind of contents already exist in our universities and universities of applied sciences, but they are not at the moment in the form that they are available for all students in all universities and applied sciences. A very important issue that was constantly in discussions in this UNIFI working group and also now today's working group was that our teachers and other staff members also need education on these contents. But this is not a field that is so common or this knowledge that they need more education. And an invitation for collaboration on the field of university pedagogical work was presented in our working group. So there were very many people interested in that field. And in our university, we are now also renewing our university pedagogy studies. And when we ask our teachers what are the contents that they mostly miss, where they want to have more education, this field came up the first, the most important. So I'm very happy that the teachers are so aware of this important matter. And in our university, Ulla and Mikael, for example, are promised to be teachers in these courses. So we have truly experts there. We realized that altogether we need more coordination so that not all higher education institutions wouldn't simultaneously create same kind of contents without knowing about each other. So that is very, very clear that so much is going on. And we realized in this UNIFI working group that it is not a problem that we have many courses because there are different, for example, scientific backgrounds. They might be from social sciences or more education, environmental sciences, natural sciences. So it is okay, but that we are aware of the work we are doing in each institution and then combine and join our forces. That is a very important issue. We also, Rosemary, was it so that you suggested that we should apply also funding? We need resources in order to coordinate on this issue. So that is something that we have to consider. Yes, and we also realized that we need joint work in order to solve the still existing barriers relating to, there are quite many of them. I still hear that there are technical issues because of our different IT systems for the students to that the courses are accessible to the students and that they get credited of the studies they do and they are accepted in their curricula. And also we heard today that they, for example, the Climate University has barriers relating to getting teachers involved in the courses for different higher education institutions. And also when we create these joint courses, we need to do contracts or assignments And these processes are quite complex and they take time. And then also we need collaboration on that, how we do this process more smoothly and fluently. And so that not each and everyone tackles with the same problematic issues. So there's a real, if you wrap up this, so there's really very much going on, but the coordination work is really needed. And we decided to continue working on these issues both in the UNIFI and ARENE forums and join our forces so that we can proceed to have more coherent picture on this education and on this sustainable and responsible area. Thank you.
Do you have questions, comments here?
Please. Yes, thank you for this wrap up. And I would somehow like to say that there is a clear connection between numbers three, which I was presenting this week, especially in teacher education. And that in teacher education, there also has to be a strong pedagogical part, which would be this encouragement and building this ability to stand uncertainty, to take risks and to experiment and also to share and cooperate and then also to develop the teaching practices in universities so that there would be more room for collaboration and experimentation, because that is also something that we have to do something with the structures inside universities, which would allow them more this kind of different kind of strategies.
Mary.
Yeah, just a short comment that I really highly value Tapio Mattas and Mala Aksos and all of your input and collaboration with the seminar. Because I think from the sustainability experts' point of view, we need such a commitment, what you have now provided and collaborated with UNIFI and ARENE. So we need the top management, we need the room to operate, and there is such a strong willingness to do these pedagogical courses, provide the education for our students and the societies needing. So I think we all can thank you for the input from the education of the vice president.
Oh. How about our working groups then? Let's give a hand to Linda.